Welcome everyone to Then Now Whatever, the wrestling podcast, episode 54. Back again with the Tape Trader Diaries. I'm your host, I believe you, Duncan Joyce. I'm joined as ever by my constant companion, that's awesome, it's Kyle Cambry.
Hello, welcome to the show. It's half term, beer in hand, and ready to roll.
Oh, very nice, Kyle. What are you drinking?
I'm old school, Stella Artois.
Oh, Sheila goes out with her mate Stella, eh?
Yeah, nice and relaxing. Off to Edinburgh tomorrow for a few days.
Lovely, lovely stuff. I am also on the take tonight.
Nice. What are you having?
I've gone slightly kind of softer. I've got Pepsi Max Mango with O'Neill's Banana and Guava Gin.
Oh, wow. That's a taste sensation.
Yeah. Quite a potent cocktail. We've got a show for you today. We're looking at the December 10th, 2001 episode of WWF Raw. It's the day after Vengeance. It's taking place at the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim, California. Got a 4.65 Nielsen rating, which equates to around 7 million viewers. And this is a tape that I asked Kyle for. I guess, Kyle, this was you returning the favour for me giving you Vengeance?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, around this time, there was a lot of back and forth with different recordings, as I can sort of recall. We were sort of in the depth of our taper trade sort of standoff, if you will, of you take one, I take one sort of thing.
Yeah, we're really getting into the depths of it, and that would only increase when everything went away on Channel 4. Funnily enough, this episode is just about bang on the average viewership for 2001. Raw averaged 4.64 million viewers every week. Don't know how much of an average episode we've got, but we'll check it out. We get to see the opening pyro mostly over the shoulder of some guy in the crowd. Get out of the way, buddy! They're killing me on commentary with their attempts to not spoil Vengeance.
It was very pick and mix, wasn't it?
Right. Talking about the Undisputed Title tournament not going as expected and how there was controversy and the guy who won wasn't who JR predicted at all. Out comes co-owner Ric Flair with both championship belts, and as promised, he's going to award the title to the winner. Did you share my disappointment here, Kyle, that we weren't getting a brand new championship belt?
Yes and no. Yes, because with all things, when you unify something, you should get a new brand new belt because they both amalgamate into each other. But I don't know. As soon as Jericho, you know, had both belts, I was sort of like, do you know what? In a weird way, I actually quite like this. I think it might have got ridiculous if you got into like the boxing realms and he ended up with 5-6 belts wrapped round him and all you could see was his head. But the two, I don't know, it shocked me that I enjoyed it as much as I did.
I think it makes doubly sense for a heel being the first champion because it kind of inflates the importance of what they've won.
Yep.
Jericho really was good at putting this in his routine, like with his entrance and his posing and that. My suspicion is always when they've got both of them at once is, okay, so how are you going to unsplit these in the future then?
Yeah, when are you going to lose one of them? Yeah.
Right. But that's a ways off yet. I had a big old laugh at the Nature Boys Titantron. It's a very low resolution amalgamation of footage of him prancing and pulling faces at Vince, intercut with shots of the jet console and the WWF private jet.
Wow, a lot of money was spent on that.
most low-rent WWF Titantron since the Big Boss Man's. Flair introduces us to the winner, Mr. Chris Jericho. Oh, so he's stealing Backlund's gimmick as well as Zabisco's. JR informs us he had his first conversation with Austin in months today, and he is pissed about how the final went down. Jericho's wearing a rather hardcore hotshot worthy open dress shirt with flames on the sleeve and the bottom.
I was thinking I used to have one of them when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah.
I think I was cool as fuck walking around with it.
Yeah, that's it. It's precisely. It's a teen emo shirt. Jericho gives a very insincere set of thank yous, and he's brought a list of people to thank, which makes for a simultaneous great callback and prelude of future Jericho gimmicks to come. He says only one person believed he'd win the tournament and come out on top, and that's himself. So he thanks himself for proving all the doubt was wrong. Surprisingly, then he thanks Rock and Austin, the two biggest stars in the WWF today, and it's quite an honour to have single-handedly beaten them back-to-back in one night. Boy, he'd live off this for years. Buck up, little trooper. You gave it your best shot, but you were just beaten by the better man last night. He then thanks the little people, as he terms them, the fans. He wouldn't be here today if he didn't realise entertaining them meant nothing. He'd then like to thank one of WWF's owners, who has true class, style, and dignity, which causes him to immediately turn away from Ric Flair and thank Vince McMahon. Vince even came to ringside to ensure there was no outside interference from anybody. And that's when he turns back around to stare a hole at Flair. He does actually thank Flair, though, for being a man of his word. And he knows why he's doing it, too. He always wanted to share the ring with a larger-than-life superstar, a true living legend. And this is Flair's chance, so he anoints him the honour of bestowing the titles upon Jericho. Flair puts one title on each shoulder. That is just a great shot. Anybody who hasn't checked our social media yet, have a gander at a little blast from the past that I found. So we're in the era of the Undisputed Championship now, and little old 12-year-old Dunk, when he was properly getting into his art class, decided to do an illustrated history of the Undisputed Championship, and I've posted my first drawing from that. Chris Jericho with both the belts on his shoulder, like we're seeing here now.
Absolute perfection.
I'll gradually upload those as we go through this timeline and roll on to 2002. Flair asks if Jericho feels like the world champion, because he's defending the title tonight in a 15-foot-high steel cage.
See, you know when they make announcements like this, I know that back then wasn't anything like it is now, where we sort of know the basic match card before it's going to happen. Like, so for example, we're on a Monday today and we already know the match card for tonight's Raw.
Yes.
Back then, you weren't to know what was going to happen. But fans coming into the arena would have been like, there's a fucking cage here. We're going to get a cage match tonight. What the fuck?
I have that exact note, Kyle. The camera pans right up to show the cage has been there all along. And Jericho has this hilarious, what's that doing there, face?
Surprise!
His opponent? Stone Cold! Woo! Steve Austin! Well, that sets the scene for tonight then. Yeah, as you're saying, Kyle, in today's age, you probably would have just had like a statement or a graphic out on social media already, but with this being only like less than 24 hours after the pay-per-view, they didn't really have any way of getting across what they were doing until, I guess, the moment people were tuning in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this. I thought it was a good promo from Jericho.
This is where Jericho really ups the ante in a sense of his heel promos and really getting on the nerves of the fans, but in a good way that he's then respected as a heel.
Yeah, I think sometimes with Jericho, a bit of the cool heel comes in there and people kind of get magnetized to his catchphrases and things like that. And I don't really think any of that happened with his undisputed title reign. Like, people booed him like they were actually supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, like, your perfect example of that for Jericho is his best friend shtick that he did. You know, the whole, you just made the list. That became so synonymous that he actually, in the end, everyone loved him.
Yeah. If your long-term goal is going to be to turn back face, it's fair enough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when you've... like the heel champion, you definitely need to get the right heat.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we've got a good example of what can go wrong with that next. It's our first match of the evening for the WWF Hardcore Championship. The new champion, The Undertaker, is defending against Spike Dudley. And this despicable heel, The Undertaker, how do the fans treat him, Kyle?
Like shit.
I wish. They gave him a massive fucking pop.
Yeah. What's going on? Also, his hardcore belt. I was like, where the fuck is it? Until he parked up and I was like, oh, that's where it is.
Yeah, when I spotted that, I was pondering, oh, okay. Is that trying to act kind of cool, or is it showing disrespect for the championship? And then the minute I wrote that, he tossed it into the ring over the top rope. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess it's the latter then.
Yeah.
I feel like at this point, people were reacting to Undertaker's legacy and status rather than the actual character he was portraying.
Yeah, I think as much as they were trying to lean into the treat me like shit, treat me like shit, people were just very in awe of The Undertaker and just being able to watch The Undertaker, I guess, that they never quite got that.
Speaking of never quite getting it, he didn't quite nail turning the corner around one ring post and he had to back up on his bike so he didn't hit the commentary table.
He needed the red L.
Yeah, he definitely plays with his driving lines on when he's playing Forza. Just like me, to be honest. Spike once again is in true jobber mode, wearing a generic WWF shirt, despite him having his own shirt available right now on shopzone.com. Is this man allergic to money?
I mean...
He must be a bit confused coming from ECW and living off tuna and raw potatoes.
I think the thing that makes me laugh every time I see Spike is, like, some of the matches I have completely forgot about and they're erased out of my mind. This one I remember very in particular. But any time I see Spike Dudley about to come down to the ring, I just think he's about to get the shit beaten out of him.
Right. JR points out that at £150, Spike is half The Undertaker's size.
Wow.
He just starts throwing weapons into the ring while The Undertaker stood in it. Don't think that's a very smart approach.
No.
Impressively, Taker catches a few of these, like the trash can and the kendo stick, but he just throws them back down. He's not interested. Spike then pretends to rev The Undertaker's motorcycle while pulling some Mr. Bean-esque faces, which finally forces Undertaker outside for a plancha, but Taker just catches out of midair and he drives Spike into the post. There's actually a decent spot where Spike is tied in a tree of woe, but he's still able to low blow The Undertaker with a kendo stick. And then Taker kicks away the bin lid attack and wears Spike out with the lid. He does that spot where he grinds his forearm into the opponent's nose, and then he last rides Spike through the trash can for the free count after 2 minutes and 37 seconds to retain his championship. JR says that this is Booger Red sending a message out to all of his other challengers, and then after the match, Undertaker chokeslams Spike over the top straight onto the floor. Jesus Christ.
I mean, he won the match, alright? Leave Spike alone. All I can say is Spike, maybe he deserved it for getting on his bike.
It had a couple of decent spots, but it was more of an angle than anything, and the people are still determined to cheer The Undertaker, so it didn't really work.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have classed that as a match, because for a match to work, but more people have to have at least a little bit of a chance.
Right. People weren't going to boo The Undertaker after what he put JR through. They're not going to turn on him for doing all this cool hardcore stuff to Spike in a hardcore match.
No.
Vince and Booker T arrive, surrounded by a shit ton of security, including guard dogs. Ugh. Flair then tried to confront him, looking very angry. Vince asks how his head feels, and then apologises for getting carried away at Vengeance. Booker is his guest tonight, and they're going to hang out in Vince's skybox and let Flair run the show.
I got, like, Roman and Heyman vibes from them being up there.
Yeah. Flair lets Vince know about the main event that he booked, which makes Vince angry because he had different plans for Austin. Luckily, he's already put his plan for The Rock in place. Apparently, The Rock and Trish Stratus have a tag team victory over Vince and Kurt Angle, so they're now the number one contenders and get a tag title shot at the Dudleys.
Ridiculous, but okay.
Unassailable logic there.
Yeah.
Where's the AEW ranking system where you need it?
Which also has huge flaws.
Yeah. They need to fluff their record with at least 4 wins on Dark to get into the title picture. Come on. Rick tells him don't worry about that apology because soon Flair will be apologising to Vince. I get that it's supposed to be more of a threat over what he would be apologising for, but that just sounded like a bit limp for a comeback. After the break, Vince is showing Booker T around the skybox. Look at all these donuts we have here, yeah! Booker, of course, pulling out the, tell me you didn't just do that, Vince. They'll be attended to by Felicity! Vince asks, what do people call you for short? Felicity! I'm not sure I'll have whatever she's having, to be honest.
No, absolutely not.
Our second match sees Kurt Angle taking on Rikishi. Kurt Angle is coming out to some new music for the first, and thankfully the only time, a crappy Sergeant Slaughter knockoff sounding theme with military drums and the hook for Metal played on an electric whammy guitar.
Yeah, it was shockingly shit.
Oh my god, this really stuck in my memory as a kid. It was just painstakingly awful.
Well, Mr. McMahon and Booker T taking their place in Mr. McMahon's luxury box.
Get away, Madam JR!
With plenty of security after Booker T screwed Stone Cold out of the undisputed title at Vengeance.
Hey, Mr. McMahon!
Oh, hey, Mr. McMahon.
What? Wait! You can probably see us.
But he was derailed in a slobber knocker by the Texas Rattlesnake.
Are there any famously bad themes that you're not fond of, Kyle?
None that really stick out, I don't think. Mr. Perfect wasn't great.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah. So for me, for a good theme tune, this is my logic of why it doesn't quite hit the standard. So a good theme tune has to be good played loud. But I feel like Mr. Perfect's isn't one of those tracks.
See, I liked the genuine article. I hated the rip-off theme that they gave Sean Stasiak.
Yes.
That's the same song. It just sounds so manky. Like, you talk about not wanting to play songs loud. If you played that any louder, it would, like, tear up and stuff.
Tests as well.
Oh!
Like, we know it's called Test.
Yeah.
So the theme tune doesn't have to remind us he's coming out.
I was fine with the first one that was like, but the second one was so boring.
They were testing internet, that's what it was, and they just looped it over.
Oh my god. Can you imagine if somebody came out just to the blooming dial-up tone? We were watching the best of WWE women's history. China versus Ivory at WrestleMania was there, so that was Kathy's first encounter with the Right to Censor theme tune.
Now that's got a place in history because of how fucking frustrating it used to be seeing all of those.
The worst part was hearing it on the N64 because it's such a short clip. You didn't get to the bass line at the end that actually makes it kind of, you know, like an actual theme.
No.
Kurt tells us it's a travesty that he's not the champion, and he's requested this match in tribute to Vince to avenge what he went through on SmackDown. A horror that should never be talked about or seen ever again. Let me show you what I mean. Roll the footage. They show Rock shoving Vince into Rikishi's ass as Kurt bemoans how a man of class shouldn't get consumed by a stench-filled anus. Beautiful phrasing. There's an immediate brawl, and after ducking a clothesline, Kurt, quick as a whippet, German suplexes Rikishi. Rikishi powers out of the corner and hits a Samoan drop, and then Kurt makes the mistake of trying a sunset flip, and he gets squashed with a standing bonsai. The Asalanche in the corner sets Kurt up for the stink face, but he rolls out of the ring, so Kurt just starts walking out and gets counted out of the match. Rikishi gets his Michael Jackson hat on and starts dancing to celebrate, which is Kurt's cue to jump in from behind. Rikishi, putting his former teammate Scotty Tuhati to shame, is able to keep his hat on all the while he clotheslines Kurt in the corner and hits the stink face while tipping his hat. Vince looks about to throw up, and Rikishi goes back to dancing, so Kurt attacks with a chair instead, battering him over and over again as the crowd again start chanting for The Rock. Hilariously, Kurt's new theme was such a flop, they go back to playing Metal as Kurt walks out to celebrate.
You know that someone backstage has gone, oh fuck, that they've had to go back and play Metal again.
Yeah, Vince just called him from the skybox, is like, that was shit. Vince and Booker give Kurt a standing ovation despite his count-out loss to Rikishi after 2 minutes and 1 second. I don't know, Kyle, you talk about the first match being barely a match.
Yeah, Angle didn't give a shit, he didn't want to be in this match. Yeah, I'm not classing this as a match either. So far, Raw's doing very well.
I was fairly happy with everything before Kurt took the count-out, but therein lies the problem with this match. Kurt's trying to rebound from not winning the title. Rikishi's only just come back, so neither man should lose this. So why book it in the first place?
Yeah.
There were so many like bait and switches as to what the actual end of this segment is going to be as well. I feel like they'd have been better served if they have Rikishi wrestle someone else, he wins, Kurt confronts him, does the replay of the incident so Vince can squirm around, and then he does the chair attack and that gives him something to dedicate to Vince.
That would completely make way more sense.
They replay the stink face in the chair attack after the break, and then we see the Dudleys and Stacey in their locker room, with Devon chiding Bubba for being nervous. Oh, this is a good segment for getting a view of Devon's arm tattoo, which is dedicated to his sons. It reads, Terrell and Terrence, Daddy's boys for life. And did you know they're wrestlers now, Kyle?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're a tag team called TNT. They were on AEW's YouTube shows a few times over the pandemic. Bubba calls this the toughest battle to date. They overcame the odds against Kane and the Big Show, but now they're facing an undefeated tag team. Him and D-Von are the greatest tag team ever, but tonight they might lose to The Rock and Trish Stratus. That line finally breaks Bubba, and D-Von gets in on the bit. Bubba sorts out the plan. You take care of The Rock, and I know exactly what to do with Trish Stratus. Stacy chiming in. Me too. Before D-Von closes out with a testify. We then see Ric Flair nodding along gormlessly watching the TV. Surely it's just himself on the TV that he's seeing.
Again, logic just falls straight out the window.
Right. Although maybe that's why he looks so gormless. It's like when a dog sees its own reflection or something.
Yeah.
Lance Storm comes in and Flair says he last saw Lance mopping toilets in WWF New York. I assume he means the bathroom rather than like the actual toilet. You won't get anything out of putting a mop in the toilet.
Mm.
Lance is tired of that and he's wearing his wrestling gear. He's hoping to wrestle. But Flair refuses his request for a match. That didn't really go anywhere then. Coach is then interviewing Edge. Edge gives William Regal credit, but then does a terrible British accent showing off his belt. Ain't got one of these to hold up your trousers, don't you? Have you kissed any bums lately, you bum kisser, you cheeky monkey?
Oh, that accent, man.
Acting's maybe not his forte as much as he hopes. That's enough for Regal to cheap shot Edge from behind with the brass knuckles. We then see Mad TV's Will Sasso in the crowd in a Kai and Tai shirt. And Lance again finds Flair to beg for a match. But the audio's down at first and you can hear Vince inform the truck, "We can't hear it." Lance gives the most passionless woo you have ever heard.
I knew there was a woo coming. And I was like, he's going to woo in Ric Flair's face. And then the woo that came out, I was like, oh my word.
It's like he's just the talking dictionary that you'd phone back in the day. It's like, woo. Flair informs him the answer is still no. And then we head to our third match. It's William Regal taking on Kane. JR plugs the Royal Rumble tickets that go on sale on Saturday. I thought they'd have sold them months ago.
Yeah.
To show you how different the business is back then. Oh, it's also our first look at the Royal Rumble's makeover with the hollow M in the Rumble.
Mm.
It was a bit of a culture shock at the time, but I thought it looked quite nice.
Yeah, it looked smart.
Referee Teddy Long checks Regal more rigorously than normal because of all the brass knucks hoopla. And Regal cuts a promo saying what he just did to Edge is only the beginning, because this is a new William Regal who dish out punishment like you've never seen before. But his promo gets cut short by Kane's pyro. It's another brawl at the bells. Kane gets a back body drop and a big sidewalk slam for a two count. A second back drop is kicked away, but Kane immediately levels Regal with a clothesline. With Regal on the outside, for some reason, Kane decides this is a great time to try his diving clothesline to the outside, and when Regal naturally sidesteps it, he gets the brass knucks out of his tights, the one place the ref didn't check.
I mean, when he was doing the checking, I was thinking, there's only one place left you've got to check, and all Teddy Long did was just tap the sides of his thighs and go, yeah, Willie, I'll be fine.
Kane still gets a big boot and brings Regal back in for his normal top rope clothesline. However, Regal uses the power of the punch to the ribs, and then a second shot to the head downs Kane for the free count. Vince and Booker toast Regal's victory in the skybox, even lifting their pinkies while sipping from their mugs like true gentlemen. Regal's the winner in 2 minutes 25. Another match that's more of an angle than a match. Very little going on from Regal besides getting his power of the punch gimmick over. As well as some literal leaps of logic from Kane. Like, what was that clothesline attempt about?
I feel like this Raw is going to get the record of the most ridiculous and pointless matches ever.
It feels like it. How expendable has Kane become as well?
Oh, yeah. His career's a bit like that, isn't it? It sort of ebbs and flows. He becomes a monster again, and then he ends up going down to the lower mid-card and getting jobbed, and then he's back up as a monster again, and then he goes back down again, and you end up with corporate Kane, and you're like, what is going on? Just keep this guy strong.
Yeah, there needs to be some sort of traumatic incident that seems to power him up. Like Tori breaking up with him, or getting unmasked, or getting remasked, or... Yeah. We've whizzed through that, but believe it or not, that's the halfway point of the show. So, Kyle, since we were talking about expecting new championships earlier, what's your favourite championship belt design?
I mean, there's a very, very special place in my soul for the WWF Championship belt, which is the one that we see in our current Tape Trader Diaries, as that's the one that I grew up with and became so fond of. So that design will always have a special place. Other mentions, I really liked the NXT designed belt after they got rid of the larger NXTs. You know, when it was Finn and Samoa Joe and all that, that redesign. I thought that looked really, really smart. That was really good. Spinner belt, can't beat the spinner belt. Yes, it was only Cena, but the fact that other champions could pull it off looked good on Randy. Edge made a go of it, looked great on Triple H. So I think, yeah, I think they're the ones that come to mind. You know, obviously the big gold belt, you know, Goldie, that gets a mention, but we've got both of those. We're talking about both of those right now. But yeah, they're mine.
Big gold belt, that is a classic. I wonder if that's another reason they're keeping both of them around at the same time, just to show that they've kind of consumed WCW too.
Yeah, I mean, and the other one as well, I've got to shout out to the tag team belts. I think the design of the tag belts currently are shockingly shit.
Oh my god, yeah.
We really need the old style back. They were so good.
Yeah, I don't like the blooming tin pot Roman gladiator belts at all. I go back and forth all the time between the, I guess they call it the V2 Winged Eagle Championship belt, the one that you were mentioning.
Yeah.
Again, that's the one that I grew up with. So many people looked really good with that belt. Triple H looked really good. The Rock looked really good. Jericho looked good with it too, which is why I felt like it's a shame that this is the only long-term time he got with it. It's not the kind of centrefold. Like when he quote unquote won it off Triple H for the one night and he came out with it around his waist, it looked really good. So I go back and forth between that one and the Undisputed Championship belt that we'd eventually get.
That's a smart design. And I think the only reason that I don't mention that one is because at the time I was very much against it because I liked the winged belt so much. It eventually won me over. It had to because they weren't changing it. But it did take me a while before I was like, oh, God.
No, I loved it. It's the right mix of the two championships. It was like bigger and golder, like it was inherited for the WCW championship, and it had the same kind of style on the champion nameplate and the globe and the eagle and stuff, like the WWF title.
Yeah.
I love the way it looked on Eddie Guerrero too. That's like my favourite way a wrestler has looked with the championship.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when did it change? It was 2002, was it? Because all I remember is I remember the belt change and the WWF change to WWE around the same time.
And they were right after the other, so they had to get a brand new belt like 3 different times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's 2002. We'll be seeing it soon.
Teases.
Our fourth match of the evening is for the WWF Tag Team Championship. The Dudley Boys, the champions accompanied by Stacey Keibler, take on The Rock and the WWF Women's Champion, Trish Stratus. JR says Rock got jobbed out last night. Bloody hell, that's kind of Matt Stryker level insider terms there. Feels weird seeing Rock without a championship, and he even still seems to do the little flick of his wrist when he lowers his arm, as if he still had a belt.
Yeah.
He proper mouths off to Vince while he's on the turnbuckle, and Vince and Booker just wave back at him. Rock downs Devon early on with a back body drop, and then batters both Dudleys by the announce table, even sending Bubba over Devon's shoulders and across the entire table. Bubba somehow became the legal man without tagging out and ate a Samoan drop for 2. An actual blind tag does allow Bubba to clothesline Rock down. The Dudleys start getting frequent tags to emphasise that the Rock is at a disadvantage with Trish as his partner. And even Stacey gets in on the act, choking the Rock while the ref is distracted. There's a huge double flapjack by the Dudley boys as JR informs us, the crowd tonight, they're getting their money's worth. I disagree so far.
Yeah, I absolutely disagree so far.
Rock hits a belly-to-belly on Devon, but Stacey pulled Trish off the apron to prevent the tag. Rock survives a sleeper from Bubba and suplexes out. And then Bubba doesn't seem to have a clue what is going on for the next few spots with Devon. So Bubba comes back in with a clothesline. And then they finally remember. Bubba accidentally clotheslining Devon and Rock DDTing Bubba. Rock fends off the Dudleys with right hands and counters a 3D with a double clothesline. The spine on the pine allows the Rock to lock the sharpshooter on Devon, but Bubba makes the save, only to then get distracted, eyeing up Trish, which sets him up for a spinebuster 2. The people's elbow connects. Devon attempts to save a fall, but it hits Bubba by accident. Trish wants and gets the tag, and they do a rip-off of the Dudleys. What's up? JR asks, can you imagine Trish Stratus driving her head into your crotch? Which sets Jerry aback. Oh, what? Then when Stacey gets on the apron to complain, they do the what's up to her too. Hold on a minute. Out comes Test and Rock meets him in the aisle for a brawl. That leaves Trish all alone and the 3D gets the academic free count for the Dudleys to retain after 11 minutes and 50 seconds. Rock returns to clear out the Dudleys and Rock bottoms Bubba, only to then eat a big boot from Test. And Vince and Booker applaud in their box. Ooh, wild one there, Kyle.
Yeah. Again, I mean, I think this was the first match of Raw that we've had tonight.
I guess so.
I don't know. It was essentially a 2-on-1, wasn't it? Trish wasn't going to do much. The numbers game caught up to Rock again and again and again and again and again and again and again. And then Tess came out for the numbers game to catch up again and again and again and again. Yeah, great to see The Rock. Good to see the Dudleys, I guess.
Yeah, you could almost fit the first 3 matches into this match twice over.
Yeah.
The early goings of this were a very easy watch, but then it started to become a bit clear that they were keeping things much more rudimentary than when they last shared a ring, that really good SmackDown tag team match that we had the other week. And then things took a bit of a downturn when they were doing that triple down spot and they forgot what they were doing.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it picked up a bit with the closing stretch, especially with Rock and Trish's double teams. As a kid, I liked Test more than most people, and I was excited to see him look like he was going to actually have a major feud with The Rock.
Yeah.
Given how cookie cutter he's been on the podcast so far, it's easy to see why that didn't take off, though. We get a replay. not of Test downing the biggest star he's ever had the upper hand over ever, or any of that tag title match, but of Ric Flair blindsiding Jericho with the announcement of his first title defence. Oh God, did you see the match graphic they had with the floating picture of the WWF title over Jericho's shoulder?
Yeah.
That's recycling an old graphic where Jericho was both the tag team champion and the WCW champion. Oh my God. I'm glad we don't have to put up with that kind of thing anymore. Vince's music plays and he addresses the crowd. What a wonderful time they're having. And him and Booker give the crowd a slow, royal waving motion. He admits he's closed the Kiss My Ass Club after The Rock shoved his face into Rikishi's posterior. At Vengeance, he laughed last and loudest, so he's opening a new club, the Vince McMahon Kick Your Ass Club. Flair, Austin and Rock became honorary members at Vengeance, and just now Trish has also joined, as well as The Rock for a second time. Because anybody can join, and join multiple times. All you gotta do is cross the boss. Make no mistake about it, Mr. Flair, I am the boss. He wants to introduce the luminaries of Hollywood to the biggest star of all, Booker T. And Booker does his spin-a-rooney pose as Vince warns, hey, you guys better watch that door, which ends the promo on a big old whimper. I don't see this Vince McMahon Kick Your Ass Club catching on in quite the same way.
No.
In the locker room, Lita is still trying to apologise to Matt for missing his foot on the ropes last night and reminds him he was the one that put her in the position to be the ref in the first place. Now he's asked for Lita and Jeff to wrestle him in a handicap match, but she doesn't want to fight him. Matt just continues lacing his boots through all of this, even when Lita tells him, I love you. Matt just reckons she's trying to make him feel guilty. She should have just said if she didn't want to be the ref. He's asked for this match so Lita and Jeff can conspire against him to his face this time. Just like the Hardy Boys, Lita, me and you are breaking up.
Unbelievable.
Jeff consoles a distraught Lita to close the segment. Yeah, sure, she could have just said no to being the ref, Kyle.
Well, yeah, you know, again, common sense and storytelling and the fans are stupid, remember?
It's the brains behind the Hardy Boys, don't forget. That leads us into our fifth match of the night. It's a handicap match. Matt Hardy facing Lita and Jeff Hardy. And look who's in the crowd, Kyle! It's Michael Clark Duncan! And he throttles Jerry Lawler!
What a legend.
Choke that bastard out! We avoid a Vengeance-style music situation by having Jeff and Lita come out to Lita's theme instead. King tells Lita that he's available, because of course he is.
Yeah.
Lita still tries to get between the brothers to stop any fighting, but Matt just shoves her down and brawls with Jeff. He's pulling at Jeff's hair and dumps him on the outside, hitting a clothesline off the apron. Jeff gets the whisper in the wind and the wishbone split leg drop, but Matt escapes the twist of fate to send Jeff over the top. This then gives Lita a chance to nail Matt with a fantastic Lita Kanrana. But Matt is still able to dodge the Swanton Bomb. Lita officially tags in, but all she does is check on Jeff, who's hurt from missing the Swanton. That just allows Matt to roll her up for the free count after 4 minutes and 40 seconds. What do you think?
Well, I mentioned this the last time. These two have such good chemistry together as a tag team, but against each other, they just can't seem to get it right. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether they're putting too much pressure on themselves because they're against each other or... I don't know what it is. When they face off against each other, I can't seem to get behind it.
I know, it still feels like it's missing something.
Hmm.
There was a lack of aggression in the Vengeance match, and they corrected that here. They had a much more aggressive approach to each other, but I still think it was hardly anything substantial until you get to the finish. Matt's sell job for the Lita Kanvrana and Lita's execution was far and away the highlight here. This angle had me swearing bloody murder on Matt, and I could not wait for Lita and Jeff to get their revenge. But we'll see what we end up with instead when we get to the Rumble. Ric Flair's watching telly again, trying to feign concern for the Hardys' apparent breakup. Lance comes back and Flair just flat out goes, "Oh no, not again." Lance just wants to prove himself and earn his place with a victory. Flair's so sick of the sight of him that he just gives him a match, but if Storm doesn't win, Flair doesn't want to see him again. So that leads to our sixth match of the evening. Lance Storm is taking on, well, it's the Big Show. It's nice of him to still keep Lance's music on file, even though he doesn't work here anymore.
See, Shane McMahon has forever ruined that theme tune for me. Well, he's a bit slow.
Oh. Not going to lie, I did almost save a big slow when I was repeating it then. Storm, baseball slide show, before he could even get in the ring. But his plancher is caught and he gets gorilla pressed all the way back into the ring. Lawler proves he's actually paying attention by pointing out that's similar to what happened to Spike Dudley earlier. We get some impressive reach from Storm as he gets a thumb to the eye of the Big Show, only to eat a short arm clothesline. Show then blocks Storm getting his feet up in the corner and in one fell swoop gives him a chop. That was nice. Show's version of the whole train misses, even though he does a little choo! And a big boot is caught in the corner, but Big Show kicked him away before he could work the leg over. So Lance comes back with a great leg lariat to the back of the head. He follows it up with a top rope missile drop kick, but the Big Show powers out of the cover, blocks a super kick, and hits a massive choke slam for the 3 count. After 2 minutes and 37 seconds, I really liked this for a really simple big versus small match. I really enjoyed Lance's hope spots at the end. I thought it was a nice easy watch compared to some of the other stuff that we got tonight.
Isn't it going to be a bit mental that Lance Storm might win match of the night?
Oh, well. I love Lance Storm, Kyle.
No, I mean, in comparison to, like, who we've seen tonight.
Well, yeah.
Just bonkers. I agree with you. I think that it was really nice, sort of David against Goliath back and forth. It was quite fluid as well.
Oh, for sure. That's kind of the standard when you've got Lance in there. I do see your point, though. WWF put him in very mechanical roles, shall we say.
Yeah.
Vince and Booker complain about Jericho being put in the cage match, and then Felicity arrives with sandwiches. Vince is surprised because he didn't order anything, so Booker thinks it might be a trap by Austin. He makes Felicity try a sandwich to prove that they're fine. Can you imagine if she, like, keeled over or something? We then see a shot of the original Watt shirt, all in capitals, just like the one from Euroshop in the catalogue that came with WWF Magazine back in the day. It's Austin! What? He gives out about Jericho winning and Vince and Booker screwing him. But, what along with me, Kyle, there's no use crying.
What?
Whining.
What?
Moaning.
What?
He was mulling over who he wanted revenge on, Jericho or Booker. So he went to the Sonic Drive-In and ordered a lot of junk food.
What?
Beer.
What?
Whiskey.
What?
A margarita.
What?
And a Bloody Mary.
What?
And decided he could have them both.
My God.
Sit up there in your stupid little skybox and watch him kick Y2J's ass. He'll make Jericho a super duper star of Austin's new movie. My name's Chris Jericho and I got my ass whooped in a steel cage. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. Austin got to show much more personality than he had the chance to show at Vengeance right here. I will say, he's winning me over, slowly but surely. Still in Little Dunk's bad books for being the leader of the Alliance, but we're going to have some fun time with his promos coming up, I think. So it's time, Kyle, for our main event. It's a steel cage match for the WWF Undisputed Championship. Chris Jericho is defending against Stone Cold Steve Austin. They borrow the Undisputed Championship match graphic from last night, and JR informs us you can only win the match by escape, which he calls unusual rules, as opposed to, you know, every other cage match in history. Jericho was arguing with the ref instead of getting in the cage, so Austin went outside to beat him up. While Hebner restrains Austin from using a chair, Jericho climbs over the top of the cage back in the ring, but Austin gets back inside in time to hotshot him and Fez press him back in the ring. Fans walk along with the mudhole stomping. Jericho tries to escape the cage directly from an Irish whip, but got pulled back down. You can hear him call spots for Austin in this match. Austin is partially deaf in one ear, so everyone would like really shout their spots to him. At least at Vengeance, he'd like covered his hand up and stuff for, you know, convenience.
Yeah.
Austin watches Jericho crawl for the door, but yanks him back in at the last second just to taunt him. He pays for it by being sent into the steel cage head first. Jericho then exposes the buckle, but Austin avoids it and backdrops Jericho into the cage. Jericho goes for a stunner, so Austin tries the Walls of Jericho, but settled for a kick in the nuts instead. A bulldog and lion salt by Jericho sees him try to escape, but Austin meets him on the top rope and superplexes him down. Jericho's somehow the one crawling from the door first from that one, and when Austin pulls him away by his foot, he counters with an enziguri. When he's dragged away a second time, Jericho hits the stunner. This time, he gets his whole upper body out of the cage, and when Austin drags him back in, Jericho's second stunner gets blocked, and he gets sent back and forth into the cage. Austin takes off more turnbuckle padding and sends Jericho into the exposed buckle, over and over and over again, busting him open. It's followed by a catapult and a stun gun into the buckle. Jericho somehow still has the presence of mind to flip off Stone Cold Steve Austin, just as it looked like Austin was walking out of the match. So like the idiot that he is, he returns to the match. Flips him a double bird, gives him a Stone Cold Stunner. This time he actually goes to leave, but out comes Booker T, who slams the door into Austin's face. That allows Jericho to crawl out of the door to retain his championship. After 11 minutes and 2 seconds, Vince applauds on in his box, and we close the show footing between Austin, Jericho and Book, all scowling at each other. What did you think to that main event, Kyle?
Well, I felt it took a while to get going, but once it got going, it picked up the ante a little bit. The exposed turnbuckle, how many times did he need to do that? And then once he'd finished busting him open, he then goes, actually, well, I've not finished with the buckle. We're going back. The Booker T interference was just a big flashing, hello, this is going to happen, after what Austin was saying before the match. So you sort of just knew Booker would appear at some point. We all know what happens next with the lovely grocery fight.
Oh, it's fucking sensational!
But yeah, going back to the match, I thought it was alright as a main event. And it could have done way more stuff, but you know, and considering the matches that we've had, it's a 5-starer.
Yeah, it basically walks it as far as Match of the Night goes. Really solid stuff, and much more even-handed than the last time we saw Austin in a cage. Sorry, Rikishi. Thought they made good use of the cage, they had a good rhythm, and I really like Jericho getting closer and closer and closer with each crawl out. But I'm so glad you mentioned the turnbuckle stuff, Kyle. I thought that was a bit ridiculous at the end.
Yeah.
Jericho should have been devastated. He hit that buckle at least a dozen times. And, you know, one of those usually finishes a match.
Absolutely.
Jericho survived all of that, and then one single door shot is enough to put Austin down. I am also not a big fan of the stupid babyface refuses to leave the cage because his opponent taunted him. Like, get out of here. But still, solid enough stuff. That brings a close to the show. Poor little Dunk is having to live in a world with Jericho as undisputed champion still. But yeah, I don't know. What did you think of this overall, Kyle?
I mean, I felt like it answered a few questions from Vengeance, in the sense that we got to see Jericho with his belts and we got to see him being his usual heel self. Other than that, I think story-wise, it sort of didn't really move that far. You didn't really see anything pay off. The Hardys fighting each other was a bit of a dud. Angle making a mockery out of a match with Rikishi. I don't know. I've got to say, it's probably one of maybe the lower-end Raws that I've watched in that year.
I can understand that. This felt relatively self-contained, really. It was almost all about making people aware of what came from Vengeance rather than actually setting up anything proper for the future.
Yeah.
It only really had Booker T and Austin and Test and Rock and maybe more things coming from the Hardy Boys as being anything that's like relatively concrete for the future. I mean, of course, you got Vince and Flair getting more and more at loggerheads, but as a kid, I wasn't interested in, like, authority figure wars, really.
No.
It's a big old disappointment in the ring. It's kind of interesting to see who was expendable, in a sense. Kane and Lance Storm trying to campaign for his getting his career back, and I feel like at the time, Flair came across as a little bit heelish. I didn't think much about it like when I was a kid, because I was like, whoa, he shouldn't just have a job. He was a WCW guy and he lost. And, you know, at the same time, Booker T was also a WCW guy. He's just getting let back in by Vince because he's going to do Vince's bidding. So I kind of understood that they were trying to go for that distinction, but I don't know, like, Flair came across as just as much of a dick as Lance, to be honest. Poor old Rikishi, like, we talked a little bit about his struggles on the previous episode. And yeah, thank God that dreadful Kurt Angle theme didn't leave this night. So yeah, a bit of a disappointment overall. In terms of match of the night and MVP, the cage match in the main event is kind of the best match by default, really. It's the most complete match overall that you'd maybe get outside of just a plain old television show. And Jericho's the MVP for me, both the way he wrestled and his opening promo. Kyle?
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, anything else you wanted to get in about the show?
No, I think we've gone over everything we needed to do about that show. It was just, for me, it was very much, it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad, if that makes sense, which then makes the show a bit irrelevant.
Yeah, it just kind of like went by easily enough, but it really feel too important.
No.
Well, don't worry, Kyle, because up next we'll have a very, very, very important episode of Raw.
Oh, yeah.
It's finally going to be time for... Oh, God, what's the...
To play the game!
When we join you next time, we'll be looking at the January 7th, 2002 episode of Raw, where a certain Mr. Helmsley returned from his quad injury. I don't know why he turned up so late. They made this pay-per-view with all the fancy match graphics for him and everything, and they played his U2 music video, and he's only going to show up now because it's at Madison Square Garden.
That is so hype.
We look forward to you joining us next time, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at TNW Podcast, on Instagram at TNW underscore podcast, or you can give us a like on Facebook to keep track of our latest episode news and just have a natter with us. Give us a follow, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and SoundCloud. Give us a rating or a review if you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Or check out a playlist of all of our past episodes on our Spotify page, as well as a playlist of all of my guest appearances on the Rory's Nitro podcast. I am just fresh off recording a brand new episode with Lee, looking at the November 18th, 1999 episodes of Thunder and SmackDown, and boy, were there some stinkers in that one. That wraps it up for tonight. It's a good night from Kyle.
Good night. Thank you very much for listening.
It's a good night from me. I'll catch you down the road. What? Down the road. What? Down the road.